You want to turn to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 20. We'll be beginning there tonight. And I don't know whether to take Alex's prayer as a hint or what, since he emphasized twice that I would be standing before you shortly. I don't know if there was a message there or if that was just coincidence. Being a preacher, I'll take it as coincidence. So, oh boy. It looks like we've got more over here than we do over here tonight. Alright. That doesn't happen very often. I can recall when Dawn and I were the only ones that sat over here. I hope that doesn't mean we're getting a church split going here or something. But, left side against the right side and all that kind of thing. But it's good to be a little more balanced, I guess you could say. All on one side. The Proverbs of Solomon. We were just talking about Solomon in our 10th class. With all of his wisdom that God had given him, still he allowed his human weakness, which in his particular case, his weakness was women, and the desire to have more of them than he needed, and more than any man could possibly need at that. But those women, eventually, because he married pagan women, idolatrous women, and eventually he allowed them to talk him into building places of worship for their heathen god. With all of that wisdom, and yet he allowed that to happen to him. It just goes to show that even wisdom is not something that can protect you from temptation and from the sins of the flesh. But we have to watch. We have to be wary, and we have to keep ourselves from those tempting situations. And we were talking about that, wondering, you know, with all of the good that Solomon did, and yet with that sin in his life, and with bringing that idolatrous worship and allowing it in the nation of Israel, even though certainly he never promoted it, never wanted the other Israelites to practice it, but he allowed that to continue by his wives to their heathen gods. It sounds a lot of like the way people want us to be today. They want us to allow all sorts of heathen ideas into the church. They don't even necessarily want us to promote them. They don't want us to teach it. They just want us to allow it. But we see what happened to Solomon because of that. Because he allowed that to take place. So we've got to be wary, and we've got to be constantly on our guard. But despite those mistakes that he did make, the wisdom that he wrote down and recorded in the book of Proverbs, as well as in Ecclesiastes and the Song of Solomon, are things that were inspired by God. And we can take them to heart. In chapter 20, beginning in verse 1, there is a message that says a lot about most of the people. I won't say most of the people, although probably over half, I'm sure, are involved with this particular problem. He says, wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. One of our country's biggest problems is alcohol. Most of the people who drink alcohol think that they don't have a problem with it. It's the other guy that has a problem with it. But the fact of the matter is, the only way that you can ever be sure you don't have a problem with alcohol is if you just don't have any alcohol. These folks that think, well, I can handle a drink now and then, or I can, you know, it's just one drink after work to relax me, or this kind of thing. Solomon warns us, wine is a mocker, and whoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Now, I guess he didn't want to be really cruel, but we know if you're not wise, what are you? You're foolish. And there's only two things, you know. If you're not righteous, well, you're unrighteous. If you're not godly, then you're ungodly. You know, there's no other. So if you're not wise, if you're unwise, then you're foolish. Solomon says, wine, strong drink, alcohol. And now realize that at the time Solomon said this, what they considered strong drink was probably the equivalent of what we have now that we call beer, which is one of the weakest of the drinks. That was as far as the alcohol content. They didn't have the ways of fermenting it that we have today. We've refined our ability to make alcohol more potent, as if it wasn't potent enough. We've made it stronger and stronger in our society. Now, why would we do that? There's only one reason to make alcohol, and that's to get somebody drunk. That's the only purpose it serves, is to cause somebody to be drunk. Now, I know, you know, some folks, well, you know, back in the Old West, they'd give somebody some whiskey when they were going to pull a bullet out of them or something like that. Well, the idea was you get them drunk enough, they won't feel it. And I don't know, maybe it had that medicinal use at that time before they had anesthetics like we have today. But the fact of the matter is, most folks drink because they know that it's going to give them a buzz, so to speak, and that it's going to cause them to be able to feel less. It's going to cause them to be able to be different than they are when they're sober. And of course, the Bible teaches us that we should not be drunk with wine wherein is excess, but that we should be filled with the Holy Spirit. So we need to avoid alcohol at all costs, because one drink can turn a good person, a moral person, a religious person, a Christian, a young person, any person, into an alcoholic. And an alcoholic will struggle with that for the rest of their life. So we need to avoid it at all costs. Not to mention, of course, the others that we could bring down with us if they followed that example. Then verse 4, he says, the sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold. Therefore shall he beg in the harvest and have nothing. Well, you know, if you've ever done anything with a garden or with farming, you know you've got to plow that ground up and get it ready. You can't wait until it gets warm to do that. And down here it can never really get all that cold. But in places where it gets really cold, you know, you've got to be out there in January and February plowing that ground up and getting it ready to plant those seeds in March and April so that they'll grow and be ready to produce them so that you can harvest them. But he says, the sluggard, you know, too cold to go out there and work today. You feel that way sometimes. It's too cold to go out and work. And some things it may be too cold to do. If it's just, you know, frivolous things, then it's too cold. But if it's something that's necessary to make a living, it's not too cold. You better get out there and do it. And so he says, but the sluggard, he won't plow. And because of that, he's going to be begging in the harvest. And how many people at this time, when they didn't have welfare and social security and unemployment and all the things we had, how many folks do you suppose are going to feel real sorry for this guy who didn't plant when it was time to plant because it was too cold? Not a lot of them would have much pity for him. And so he says, and he'll have nothing. Because he wasn't going to get a lot of charity. The charity was reserved for the widows and the orphans, and you know, they weren't living. Even though this was the land flowing with milk and honey, they didn't have the kind of material blessings that we have today. And they didn't have just such an abundance of food that they just laid it around and let anybody go and pick it up. They had enough to feed their family and maybe enough to save some for seed for the next year and maybe enough then to sell a little to be able to buy some other things that they needed for the year. Most of those folks were not getting rich. And then, of course, they had to pay their taxes to Solomon, and they had to pay you know, their tithes to the Lord at the temple. And, you know, they, by the time they got done, they didn't have a whole lot to just give to somebody who was too lazy to go out there and work. And maybe that's a part of our problem in the United States today, is that we are so blessed that we have such an abundance in our nation that we're able even to give to those who are lazy. And that could be a detriment to us more than a blessing. In verse 11, he says, even a child is known by his doing, whether his work be pure and whether it be right. You know, even a child, even a little one, we already know whether they're doing right or not. We already make that distinction. Well, that little boy is acting good, and that little boy is not. That little girl has a sweet disposition, and that one's mean. And, you know, we already start to notice those things, even in children. Well, how much more so then of those of us who are adults? You think people are going? They're not going to judge us based on how pretty we are. Not in the long run. Oh, that may be the first thing they know. Oh, well, that's somebody that's pretty. There's somebody. But what's going to come down to most of the time? And you've got some folks that are just so set in their ways that they don't care. But most people are going to judge us based on our doings, the way that we act and the way that we behave, whether we are right, doing right or not. So we need to be sure that we begin with the children and train them up, and that we work on ourselves as well. Because people are judging the church based on what we are doing. That's how they're deciding whether the church is right or not. A lot of folks, they're not going to go to the trouble even to pick up the Bible and look to see if we're really the church of the New Testament unless they first see that we're living good lives, that we're putting something into practice, and then they'll be interested enough to start to say, well, what about that church then? But if they can't see any difference in us and the rest of the world, they're not going to be interested. Verse 20, Solomon says, whoso curses his father or his mother, his lamp shall be put out in obscure darkness. That was the law at his time. If a man cursed his father or his mother, he was to be taken out and stoned. Same thing of a woman, of a girl. To curse your father and mother just wasn't allowed. And yet it's one of the most popular things in our culture for young people to do, is to curse their mother and father. Call them all sorts of horrible names, talk bad about them. And a lot of times, the parents allow it to continue. But the fact of the matter is, there are going to be some consequences from that. Solomon says his lamp is going to be put out in outer darkness, utter darkness, total darkness. It's a reference that sounds very similar to what Jesus was saying about the outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth when he describes hell. Sounds very similar in terminology. In verse 22, this is a hard one for us many times, but it's something that we need to understand and we need to practice. Say not thou, I will recompense evil, but wait on the Lord and he shall save thee. It's hard for us sometimes not to say, well, you know what, I want to get even with that guy. I want justice to be done. I want them to be caught, and I want them to be punished, and I want to watch them be executed for their crimes. Solomon says, don't try to do that. Wait on the Lord. Wait on the Lord. He'll save you. He'll make it right in the end. You know, you often think about different things about individuals, and I think about, as they were talking about the last pope that the Catholics had before the one they've got now, John Paul, I think was his name. But they were talking about sometime, I guess he was someone tried to assassinate him. They shot him. And they mentioned about him that as he was being carried to the hospital, he said, you, be sure to tell him that I forgive him. Now, you know, there are a lot of things about the man that were not admirable, but that's something. Somebody just shot you. What's your first response? Well, it's sure not be sure to let him know that I forgive him, and I'll be praying for him. And they say even after he got out of the hospital and the man was in jail, he said the first thing he wanted to do when he got out of the hospital was to go and talk to him, because he wanted him to know that he forgave him. He wanted him to know about why he forgave him and about God and so forth. Well, that's a good attitude. Not wanting to recompense evil. I've always said that, you know, with a lot of religious people, even though they may not have the truth, they have some admirable qualities that we can learn something from. And that's one thing that we can learn from him, is that attitude. That attitude, that particular attitude, is very Christ-like. That's what Christ said as he was hanging on the cross. That's what Stephen said as he was being stoned to death. Lord, lay not this charge against this sin against their charge. Don't charge them. That attitude is one that the Bible teaches, but that sometimes we just ignore or pretend it's not there. Pretend that the Bible doesn't teach that, but we need to understand that it does. And we are expected to have a proper attitude in regards to others and in regards to vengeance. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. It's not ours to repay others for the things they've done against us. And then chapter 21, only three verses in this chapter that I've marked. So we'll zoom in quickly. Verse 3 says, to do justice and judgment is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. Does that sound familiar? It sounds very similar to something that Samuel said to Saul. Obedience is better than sacrifice. Sounds very similar to some of the things that Jesus was trying to teach the Pharisees. That they, you know, they were doing all the tithing and sacrificing and all these things, but they were missing the big picture. They were missing justice and mercy. We need to do justice. We need to do justly. Live justly. To do justice and judgment. In other words, to do what's right and just. Fair. We need to do that. In verse 9, perhaps Solomon had a lot of experience with this, I don't know. But he says, it is better to dwell in a corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman in a large house or a wide house. Now, with all those wives he had, I'm sure at least one of them was a brawling woman at times. Maybe he had one all the time. That's one of the things. I can't imagine, you know what? With that many, surely one of them was mad at him about something all the time. I can't imagine him ever having a time where there wasn't one of them that was upset about him about something he'd done or hadn't done or whatever. But he did understand that, whether he had practiced it in his life or not. He understood that the personality, that's what this really comes down to, is the personality of this individual. More important than what they look like. More important. They always say, oh, as you get older, you're going to lose your eyesight anyway. But I guess your hearing too. But boy, that contentiousness and constantly growling. You know, most of us don't like to fight all the time. Now, there are some people that I believe were born for nothing other than to just fight. But most of us don't like that. You know, we might like to joke around and tease with somebody a little bit. But I mean, just to really brawl with somebody, you just don't like that. It's not pleasant. It keeps you miserable and on edge all the time. It's not pleasant for anybody that's around. But sometimes, that's the way we are, even though we know it's not going to bring anything but grief. We need to watch out. And this final one in verse 19 is very similar. He says it's even better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and an angry woman. And again, he may have had some experience with that. The same thing, of course, with these. Remember, Solomon's writing to his son. So he's telling his son things about women and about what for him to look for in a wife and what to avoid in a wife. But these same things would apply on the other side of the board for the young lady looking for a husband. You know, it'd be better to dwell in the corner of the house than with a brawling man. It'd be better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry man. So the same thing would go either way, but just Solomon is using the woman because he's writing to his son. I don't know, maybe he didn't have, surely you'd think he had some daughters. But I don't know, maybe he just didn't write to them. Or maybe they kept their letters secret and didn't have them published in the Bible. Whatever the case may be. But we need to understand that our relationships tell us so much. A lot of times they spill over. Somebody's having trouble in the workplace. One of the first things that a good manager or a good boss does is see what if they're having problems at home. Because a lot of times problems at home are going to spill over into their workplace. Same thing with children at school. A lot of times, if you know, a child's been making good grades and then suddenly they're not doing well, they're having some problems at home. So we see that relationship between those that we live with is going to spill over. It's going to affect the other areas of our lives. We can't help it. And so that needs to be the first one that we work on. Because those are the people that we're going to have to spend the most time with. They're the ones we're living with. Other folks that we may see an hour here, an hour there, a few hours here, maybe even work with them 7 or 8 hours, maybe 9, even 10 hours out of the day, that still leaves us 14 hours that we're not with those folks. But if we're those folks that we live with, that we sleep in the same house and eat at the same table and have to share bathrooms and living rooms and all these, you know, we better be able to get along one way or another. We better get along with them. So we've seen a wide range again. One of the interesting things about the Proverbs of Solomon, you know, it'd be nice if they were kind of organized maybe, you know, that, well, here's the topical section here. These are all about women, and these are all about mercy, and these are all about truth, and this one's all about your tongue, and had them sectioned off. But it is interesting. You get such a mixture just as you read through them of all these different things. But we'll continue on with this next time. But we need to remember alcohol, the dangers of it. And that we'll be judged by the way we live our lives. Not only in God's sight, but even by others. Others will judge us for the things that we do. Somehow I missed this one in verse 14 of chapter 20. I'll go ahead and mark that one. He says, it is not, saith the fire, but when he has gone his way, then he boasts. I heard a woman talking on the radio, telling her sob story, I guess, about how she had taken some family heirloom. They didn't have any money, and they needed to buy some food and things. So she hawked one of her family heirlooms, and the guy gave her, I think, $50 for it. And she said she thought he gave her a good deal on it. But then she went back a couple of weeks later, and he had it in his store, in the front window, marked for $1,000. She had basically given away something of great value and didn't know it because he wasn't honest enough to tell her the true value of it. Yeah, you know he's going to have to mark it up so to sell it, make his profit off of it. But what, $50 for something that was worth $1,000. And that's what Solomon's talking about. There are folks who will take advantage of you. They'll say, that car is worthless. I'll give you $100 for it. And they turn around and sell the thing for $4,000. There are people who do things like that. And we've got to watch out. And we know, first and foremost, too, remember what he said about doing justice and judgment, being righteous and just and fair. We need to be sure that we're not that kind of person. Don't try to manipulate somebody and trick them into taking something that's not worth what it seems to be or taking something for less than what it's really worth. Now, we all want to get good deals. We understand that. There's nothing wrong with getting a good deal. But we need to not try to cheat somebody in the process. And that's what he's telling you. You say, oh, it's nothing, it's nothing, it's nothing, it's worthless. And then as soon as the person walks out, you go, oh, did you see what I got from this guy? You need to watch your attitude. A lot of these proverbs deal with our attitudes, don't they? Because the way that we live life is based on the way we think about life and on what's in our mind and our heart. If you're here tonight, you have a need to respond to the invitation. Whether in initial obedience to the gospel or as a Christian who has not been living as you should, whatever your need, we ask that you would come as we stand and as we sing.